access to the transcendental realm which is beyond our physical senses, the gross senses, and also beyond our mental faculties, our ability to think and to construe different theoretical understandings of reality. No, bhakti is something which is totally transcendental and which is placed into the garden of the heart. But correctly, the analogy is the garden of the heart. It is placed there by the hands of the spiritual master. I know that many of the devotees who are sitting here have received this gift when they first read in the books of Srila Prabhupada and became convinced. As preachers, you all know that the conditioned soul receives some understanding of Krishna consciousness, and then there is the so-called aha experience. It's zündet. In other words, one becomes enlightened and inspired. So this process is really a transcendental process where the totally transcendental entity of bhakti comes handed down from the spiritual world and is given to the individual. And it is necessary now that the individual devotee begins to cultivate this seed of Krishna consciousness by planting it firmly in the heart, in the garden of the heart, and by watering it regularly. Srila Rupa Goswami talks about this, and we find a wonderful description or summary of this in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. He had met Mahaprabhu, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, knowing that now there's Rupa Goswami who will spread the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, is explaining to him how bhakti is received and how it is developed. He said, Brahmanda Brahmitikona Bhagyavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasadipai Bhakti Lata Beach. That the living entity is roaming through the universe, planet after planet, and finally, due to immense fortune, it will meet, by the mercy of Krishna, a bona fide spiritual master who then plants the seed of Krishna consciousness or bhakti into the heart. This has happened to all of us. All of us who are situated here have met Srila Prabhupada. Some or many of us have also taken initiation by one of the representatives of Srila Prabhupada. So we all have this Bhakti Lata Beach inside our heart. And now it is extremely important to cultivate it so that it becomes a strong plant, grows, and finally pierces through the material coverings and reaches the lotus feet of Krishna. There it will produce the most valuable fruit of called prema phal, love of Godhead. Now, this is more or less all I will say to about the question how bhakti is developed. It is received by the merciful hands of the Guru Parampara from the transcendental realm, and it is developed by the watering process which is called Shravanam and Kirtanam. Now, during this process, that means after you have received the seed of bhakti, and up until you have developed the full-grown fruit of bhakti, that is love of Godhead, there is a big middle section, And I will talk today about, not today, in my seminars, about this middle section. What can you do here in this middle section to help that the plant becomes stronger and stronger and stronger? And what do you absolutely have to avoid so that the plant gets destroyed? This will be my subject matter. Welcome to this presentation, my dear devotees. It is a presentation which deals mainly with which wants to give help to all of you how to advance in Krishna consciousness, and it will get help, give help what to avoid in Krishna consciousness. My presentation is mainly based on two verses in the Nectar of Instruction, verse 2 and verse 3, which deals with the six principles which a devotee has to keep to advance in Krishna consciousness, and the six principles which destroy bhakti. I have taken inspiration mostly from a work called Bhaktialoka. It is comprised of 12 essays of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, where he explains each and every point very succinctly. And what, the way I hope to do my classes is in a new teaching style. I will talk a little, and then I will ask you two questions which you will hear for the first time this session. These questions will accompany us for the rest of our talk, and I want to engage. I want it to be like a creative session. As you have noticed, I do not have huge bunches of material, so the things I am going to say will be recorded on the tape by the fastest tape turner in the universe, called Mariam Prabhu. What I hope is that these lectures become so enlivening and so full of contents that each one of you will be inspired to maybe listen to them again and then take notes what points he or she wants to apply in his personal or her personal life in Krishna consciousness. I will start today by describing two principles which have to be avoided. Adyahara means overeating or over-collecting. Many of you laugh because we are a kitchen religion, as Srila Prabhupada says, and sometimes we may go over our natural borders. We may have eaten enough, but our stomach is full, but our tongue sends strong signals that it wants to have more. In the first verse of the Upanishamrita, Rupa Goswami describes that there are six urges which need to be controlled, and he speaks about three urges which concern the tongue. The tongue wants to speak a lot, it wants to taste food, and it wants to gulp down food to the stomach. Now, Adyahara has a very interesting psychological drive behind it. The desire to eat more than is necessary is more or less, can be more or less explained in terms of psychology of as a feeling of lacking. I had an auntie who had problems in her relationships with other people, and as a result felt often great distress. Now in the night, when everyone was asleep, she felt motivated to get up from her bed and open up the refrigerator and have an eating session. She thought, or felt most probably, that by eating my worries will leave me. Often you find that people who eat too much have deep conflicts in themselves, which they hope to alleviate by the process of taking more than is necessary. In other words, their voidness or their feeling of lacking is attempted to be fulfilled by taking on outside things. This is the meaning of adhyahara. Now, adhyahara means mostly ati. That means too much. Just very simply. And ahara means eating. However, adhyahara is not restricted only to eating food or collecting food. No, the conditioned soul tries to fulfill its lacking, like in Deutsch, Mangel, by also taking on more material things which are necessary. Adhyahara, therefore, does not only mean overeating, but also, as Prabhupada translated, over-collecting. Can you read this? It's terrible. It means over-collecting all the material, by all the material senses. The Mahabharata gives us a very interesting analogy which tells us both the psychology of over-collecting and the illusion which is going with this, that you think by taking on more things than necessary, I will somehow get rid of my feeling of lacking, that I need something. It tells us a story of a man who comes into the forest. That the last story the Mahabharata tells. He feels that there are many wild animals chasing him. So finally, as he goes and hunts through the forest, he finds out he doesn't get out of the forest because there is a net all around the forest. He loses his mind, becomes almost wild from misery, and then falls into a deep well. So this deep well, before he hits the ground, he just manages to catch hold of a plant. And as he hangs in the well, looks down, he sees a dangerous snake. And all of a sudden, as he looks up, he sees a dangerous elephant with six legs going around the Bruna and just looking at him. So he becomes totally schizophrenic with pain in the heart. And then as he looks up to something like a plant, or you call it liana in German, what is the English word? You know, the Thailand used to go. Vine. He hangs there and he sees how this weak support becomes attacked by both a black and paint red. Easily. So he knows. I can't escape upwards because there the elephant will crush me. And I will soon fall down where the snake will swallow me. Just at this moment of intense pain, he sees a beehive, which is also in the bell, and from it, a drop of honey is falling on his tongue. It falls all over his face and on his tongue, and he thinks, finally, I am enjoying. This is the illusion of over-collecting. Now the commentators say, I can't decipher this whole analogy for you because we will spend the rest of the our session which just finding out who, what is what. Let me hear, say, the bell is the body and you, the soul, are hanging in the body in the middle. Look, I'm making it like this. The soul is here, it's almost in the middle. I don't. In former times, personalities had longer arms. This was a sign of a big personality. So I have short arms, so therefore my soul is not in the middle of the body. he's hanging there. And day and night, the black and white red are eating away at our life expectancy on which we are hanging, lives of Atok. And we have to, so we are victims of the snake of death or the elephant of death, as you want it. But at this moment, when we are hanging in our material existence, in the body, we have a few days still to live here, our senses feed us information of the material world. And we forget about our situation, just like the man who had the honey drop forgot all about his spiritual, his dangerous existence. So, over-collecting means that you do take more material sense gratification through your material senses. You take it in more than you need, and you lose your spiritual vision of reality. You do forget that you are an eternal soul just passing through here. Therefore, our tradition has said that Adhyahara doesn't just mean eating too much, but taking on too much pullovers, things, and so on and so forth, which accumulate around yourself and which you have to maintain somehow or other. Do we want to know the newest craziness in America? You can rent houses, not houses, halls, which you fill up with the things which you cannot put in your own apartment. You just work, get a lot of money, and buy things which you don't really need. You put them in the halls. From time to time, you walk through the halls thinking that you are the Lord and Master of everything you see there. This is totally unspiritual, as you will agree. It is an extreme manifestation of the need to somehow get fulfilled, as you say in English, but the illusion to become fulfilled by material things. It's an extreme example. There's a meditation which each one of us can do in times when one is confronted with this Adhyahara. You sometimes know when the feast is coming, you feel you want to eat more. Or sometimes it is, oh, if I could just get this nice new tape recorder, I don't really need it. Or maybe I could get a silk dhoti. Or a silken sari with butterfly patterns on it. A new glass or a new material device. Oh, this Adihara is very strong in the computer craziness, a new program, and so on. This overcoat. Have you seen that this happens in your life with this desire?
No, Maharaj. We are practically sannyasis.
I see it sometimes happening in my life, and I become worried. What is going on here? This tendency is something very humane. One becomes like a little child, becomes happy in the process. Vishwanath Chakravarti explains it like this: in the process, that like, oh, I will get this, and when I have this, this will be so good. A new house, a new apartment, a new toy, and so on and so forth. In the same way, the human being who is spiritually not fulfilled becomes influenced by this Adyahara mentality, and one thinks one can feel happiness by over-collecting. But there is a meditation, and I've written it down, and for those who take notes, this is the most important part of my presentation. I am a spiritual particle, a part and servant of Krishna. This is how you meditate about this. I am a spiritual particle. Actually, I am a child. I am a part of the Supreme. Then you go, Krishna is my eternal Lord and Master. Think of him, how he is your Master. Surrender to Krishna's lotus feet is my eternal nature. That is natural for me, to be surrendered to him and serve him. This world is like a traveler's rest stop. You're just passing through it, really. Now you are in the body of a man, or in the body of the woman, your family, or you have renounced family life. But in either case, you're just passing through here, only for a few days. To be attached to anything in this world will not give me happiness. That's the last meditation. I think it's so nice that I want to say it with all of you together in the response fashion. I am a spiritual particle, part and servant of Krishna. Krishna is my eternal Lord. Surrender to Krishna's lotus feet is my eternal nature. This world is like a traveler's rest house. And to be attached to anything in this world
will not give me happiness.
Sounds like a church. Do you know how to capture a monkey? Take a pumpkin, take the meat of the pumpkin out, toast it, and put a banana inside. Then you tie the pumpkin to a tree, and you wait for the good literature or something. Then the monkey will come. This little hand, he will go through the little opening, get the banana, try to take the hand out. But it doesn't go out, because by now it has become a fist. It is larger than before. And the hole was just big enough for that the small hand goes through, but not the big hand. So, for you, as a human being, it might sound very easy. Solution, just let the banana go. So easy, detachment. The principle point in our philosophy.
Fancy monkey can't do it.
God is ruled by the Adhyahara principle. So a person who is also ruled by his attachments, so overeating and over-collecting, remains a prisoner through this, by this habit. So, Hare Krishna, this is my first point. I will move on in a little while. So, the next point we have to absolutely avoid, but I want to now start this process of deepening it a little bit. I want to ask my first question. What was the point made in this lecture? Please.
Over-collecting does not make you happy.
Over-collecting does not make you happy. I will repeat it for the 10th hearing afterward.
It comes from a feeling of lack.
It comes from a feeling of lack.
Makes you attached to this material world.
Makes you attached to the material world.
Unfavorable
for devotional service. The material world.
Unfavorable
for devotional service.
Is there some inner conflict?
Yes. It means there's an inner conflict really at the base of this. He is not happy and fulfilled spiritually. Okay. It will be very clear. Any realizations on this point? As you were hearing me talk, please don't say you can smile nicely and so on. Any realizations on the point? Yes.
Well, since we are in the middle of growth, the long growth, and we normally fulfill because we're not pure devotees, so I think we're in a trap in a way.
Very good. Your name is Gaurangi. You are the servant of Srila Lokanath Maharaj. Gaurangi has now has a realization. What to do? I'm surrounded with material things. I'm not a pure devotee. It seems to me I will always remain attached to the material world. Now, you have a point here, Gaurangi. I'm very, very happy about this. And you now know why I'm asking for realizations, because I can put more information. Krishna says in the Gita that every one of us is forced to act helplessly according to the qualities he has acquired from the modes of material nature. Therefore, no one can refrain from doing something, not even for a moment. And doing something means I'm attached. I would not have come to the Radhadish seminars if I wouldn't have been a little bit attached to be here and deliver this class. You will not be able to do something if there is no motivation. Motivation comes from a type of attachment. So we will always act. That means we will always be motivated. That means we will always be attached in this world. However, Krishna gives a very nice point. He says first, there is no possibility of one's becoming a yogi or jnana if one eats too much, that's adhyahara, or eats too little, sleeps too much, that's another adhyahara, who does not sleep. But then Gaurangi might say, but I will always eat too much and always sleep too much because I am a conditioned soul and I have to act on attachment. Therefore Krishna gives us a principle that we should remember while we act and do something that although we are engaged in seeing, hearing, touching, smelling, eating, moving about, sleeping and breathing, we should always know within ourselves that we are doing nothing at all. You can find the reference for this meditation in the Bhagavad Gita 5, 8 to 9 This is how a person in Krishna consciousness, or Krishna says a divine consciousness, is acting. 5, 8 to 9. Think that only your body is sitting here. That only your mouth is eating, but you are the soul. You remember our meditation? This is what we absolutely have to do, Gaurangi, to remain on the transcendental platform. I am an eternal part and parcel of Krishna. Hare Krishna, maybe I should say the names too much then it's on the paper. sorry for that. I will not do this in the future. Yes, we need to other forms of devotional service. Think of your nice service which you do as a pujari work, that you are going through this world as a part and parcel of Krishna. Thank you very, very much. We needed to hear this question, this realization. Any other realization about Adhyahara? The realization, I mean, this. It's called part of psychology discovery, something that you fight. I have a realization which I will tell you, but here's our Maharaji. Yes, please. I was actually pointing out this Maharaji first, but then you will be the next one. Yes.
Thank you for this realization.
Yes,
ma'am.
I
will do it again and again, because there is some satisfaction in
it. And the honey drop. Thank you.
Yeah, but everything is with the consciousness. First of all, we eat a lot of sadhana. We are in Krishna consciousness.
It's good.
It's everything is used to Krishna consciousness.
What happens when you eat too much, Nidya says, that you can have to sleep more than necessary and can't chant the rounds because one has so many obligations.
Yeah, that means somebody is thinking, somebody eats too much and it is not normal.
Yeah.
The logic from people are not normal.
Yeah. Yes.
Of course, we also...
What is wrong with this side? No realization? Getting a minority complex. you don't understand? Hare Krishna, please excuse me. When I'm preaching, I turn somehow into someone else. Yes, please.
I'm always thinking that it happens gradually, but I can't be too hard to myself.
Yes.
Because if
we
are too hard, then we won't be able to practice
this
in the long run.
The solution is not to become too hard and develop a neurosis. The solution is to meditate on our spiritual existence. Then this will go just naturally away. It's very nice that you have just to discuss, we are now at 12 o'clock, I have to, up to 12:30, and I need to cover the second point, but I would really like that all of you become very enlightened. See, in this discussion point, which I will raise after each point, I want to break out of the regular point of lecturing to you. I will awaken in yourself. I hope to awaken in yourself the creative side. Don't know which side of the brain it is. Now this was very typical, that the Matajis are more intuitive and more creative by nature. That's the way their mentalities work. It's a great gift by the Lord to them. But you also have to develop this creative side. Otherwise, we are not balanced individuals in our life. We need both the rational and the creative. Again, I'm sorry for this. Next point is Prayasa. But we have to. Even a different color. Now this is where I am totally expert in. It means over-endeavoring. Or useless labor also. In our conditioned state, says Bhaktivinoda Thakur, a little prayasa, that is endeavor, is absolutely necessary in order to get to a goal. If we don't endeavor for something, then nothing will come. All of you have endeavored to come here, for instance. It was a certain endeavor, even to climb up the stairs of this conference room, implied a certain endeavor. In conditioned life, we always have to work. But many of us don't want to work. Why? Because Prabhupada said this desire not to work or not to endeavor is actually spiritual. Because as spiritual souls, we do not have to endeavor in order to get something. It is not in our original spiritual nature. It just happens according to desire. We desire to serve Krishna in a special way, and we do it. There is not this absolute endeavor, because Krishna fulfills the loving desires of his devotees to serve him. But in this world, you have to slave to get every little thing done to get to a certain result. Now, in Krishna consciousness, there is also endeavor. This will come later. Now, in this material world, there are three types of endeavors. Basically, I'm speaking now in broad categories. The first endeavor is called I hope we have enough of these pieces of paper so that I don't take from the other speakers. The first is karma. Prayasa. This means you become active with your physical body in order to reach a certain goal. Like, for instance, you go to maybe not you, but people go to a factory to work, or someone builds a house. This is called karma prayasa. And very often, because this is what is under the control of the mind, this endeavor, this legal endeavor to maintain yourself, becomes overdue. The mind is not satisfied, and you work more for things which you don't need, and you totally over-endeavor. I think we don't need to give many examples of karma prayasa, because it's clear to you, isn't it? Yes, it is what we have experienced, not so much in devotee world, But in our previous lives, when we were not yet in devotional service. Now the next thing is called Jnana Prayasa. What's wrong? Prayasa, do you write it? There's a long A here. Prayasa. Jnana Prayasa means you endeavor for more knowledge than you actually need in your life. This is something which I find out we as devotees have to be a little bit mindful of. That we do not, there is no need to read too many books and to know too many books. Often it is said that if you know one shastra properly, just that's sufficient. Prabhupada has said about nectar of devotion, started with Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, nectar of devotion, TLC, that was an early statement, later Chaitanya Charitamrita. But also there, I find out that sometimes you get that the mind just wants to get more information, more information, more information, more information, and sometimes becomes a great stress. For instance, a devotee in his service might have the natural sciences. He is a science preacher, and then he collects more and more information which he really doesn't need. Or you may have an interest which you want to cover. I personally have now surrendered to this interest, which is psychology and Krishna consciousness. I find this is very interesting, and have now bought a book called Eastern and Western Psychotherapy, a very good one, and so on and so forth. So I feel it is good for my service as a preacher. But I can also sense a great danger that I will read too much and go too much into it and become more dissatisfied. This is what one devotee said, this over-collecting or here over-endeavoring leads to unhappiness. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he has said that he has become like an ass which carries too much weight. Have you seen asses in India? The poor asses with so much weight on top. It's too much. It's just too much. So in the same way, you have to be very careful to not overfreight, überfrachten, our poor mind with too many informations, especially those who are not useful for our devotional service. Now, of all the different kinds, there's also another kind, is called Vairagya Prayasa, too much renunciation. That, yes, as our Maharaji was saying correctly, if I'm too hard on me and just, you know, become too renounced in a way, that will be very dangerous for me. Our Maharaji has said the correct thing. In dealing with our material mind, we have to be as wise as a horse tamer with a horse. If the horse tamer takes the horse too much on the reins, too much back, he will break the willpower of the horse. In other words, if you are too stern on you, doing renunciation which you are not fit to make, then this will cause serious problems. It's called Vairagya Prayasa. Actually, I want to write this also down so that you have it in your notebook. Vairagya Prayasa, or as our Nitya Siddha was, Maharaji told us, you have to eat, and it's alright to eat, and so on. That's what she always says to me, because she's married to my brother and she feels motherly towards me. And so on. Yes, if you renounce, and this will create another problem. Now the versus kind of over-endeavoring, and you will be totally amused and shocked if you hear it. It's called this. Pratishtha. What does this mean? Pratishtha means name, fame, and glory. Then you work so hard to become appreciated and liked by others that everything which you do and what you say is really like me, like me, like me. Honor me, honor me, honor me. It is what Sanatana Goswami says, it is the lowest kind of all endeavors, open endeavors, but it seems that it is that endeavor which is most unavoidable for the conditioned soul. Do not know if my English makes sense. It's the lowest, yeah, but most of us cannot really avoid it because we do not experience the love of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and we are now lacking, we are now desiring to be loved and recognized by others. The original, it is described in the Shastras, that the, just like the tortoise puts its eggs on the shore of the beach and then swims in the ocean but meditates always on the eggs, in the same way you, O Padmanabha, that's the name of Krishna, meditate about your devotees, and that's how they grow up. The tortoise just breeds the eggs by the meditation on them, in this, by this mental energy. In the same way, the Lord, by thinking of the devotees, is helping them to get up. But often we don't feel this love of the Lord because we are still maybe covered in some ways. So on. And then we want the love of others. Love me, love me, love me. That's the greatest need, more than eating, sleeping, defending, and sex life even. Therefore Sanatana Goswami says, Sarvatyagirpyaheyaha Sarvanata Bhuyashchate Kuryo Pratishvatishthaya Yatnamashvashane Varam. Even if one can give up all material desires, the desire for fame is very difficult to give up. This desire for fame, which is compared to stool, is the root cause of all anattas. All anattas come from this name. Recognize me, I'm a good man, I'm a good boy. Yes. You see, then this this project, do you like it? Yeah. Do you know why it is so good? An insignificant soul has something to do with it. He's standing right before you. Therefore, one should carefully avoid touching this stool-like desire for fame. I'm repeating justice for the reversal. And Bhagavan writes, this instruction is extremely serious. The devotee should follow this exclusive duty with special care. So, now, at the end of this presentation, and then I will stop to talk on this and will ask you questions. I want to say, raise one question. It's a very serious question. I want to now, it's a question of an objector. In our philosophy, this is sometimes how it works. A thesis is presented, and then the objection to the thesis is presented, and then an answer is formulated. This is how Srila Baladev Vidyabhushana has structured his commentary on Vedanta Sutra thesis, an objection, and an answer to the objection. So I will make now an objection. Yes, what you have said is so good. Sachidananda Swami, you have read it all from Bhaktivinoda Thakur, nothing special. But now I will ask the question to you. In your movement for Krishna consciousness, devotees endeavor so hard. They rise at a time which is totally inhuman, which goes directly against the biorhythm of the human being, for, what is it, 15 minutes to 4 o'clock. In this discussion you have a borderline between man and woman. They are sitting on one side and the other side. Previously there was a back and front borderline. Shifted due to a slight understanding that maybe you are unnatural in what you do. There is so much endeavor in your movement. You send your boys and girls out on Sankirtan. Tell them, just 1 week more, please. The temple needs your support. And it is a very, very spiritually enlivening activity. You yourself, Sachidananda Swami, never eat enough. You never sleep enough. You travel like a wild man from the Amazonas around you. So much endeavor. Your movement is totally fixed in over-endeavor. You are the real Prayasis. This is the objection now. Now, I will answer the objection. The point is that the human form of life offers us the opportunity to become, to go back home, back to Godhead. And we can do this, we can reach this end by following or by realizing the end result of sadhana. That is to always remember Krishna and to never forget him. Now before, we who have been conditioned for such a long time can always remember Krishna and never forget him. We need to apply two principles. They are called abhyasa. Abhyasa. Sounds good. This means practice. And vairagya. Detachment. These two principles are given by Lord Krishna when Arjuna tells him, it is impossible for me to control the restless mind. Krishna there speaks of abhyasa yoga as another. Yes, it is difficult, he says. It is difficult. But by constant practice and by detachment it is possible. If a devotee keeps his endeavor, in other words, on these two points, he will go back home, back to God. At practice, you know, our sadhana, shravanam, kirtanam, and so on and so forth. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he deals with this, and he says, the endeavor to go to holy places with a greedy desire to awaken love of God and to associate with devotees, that is devotional service, that's natural. This endeavor, in other words, is allowed, or let me say it, in other words, it is necessary. Devotees who are endeavoring hard sometimes say, yes, Maharaj, if I don't endeavor to do my service, then how will I go on? Just a little while ago we had an interesting discussion with Jagvataka Maharaj, and we discussed this point. This endeavor to do devotional service is necessary, and it's not very important. By this endeavor you get a taste which will empower you to go on in Krishna consciousness. You will get a higher taste which is so necessary, which is almost like the life force in your sadhana. Someone who does not put his endeavor on practice and detachment in some ways, she will not be able to get that taste in Krishna consciousness. It is totally important to keep us alive and keep us going, which is really the most important Kraftnahrung. Power food, health food. This is the health food for our spiritual life. Yes. There's also a meditation for this prayasha, but then I will come to an end. A devotee should meditate like this. Now I shall disentangle myself from my material bondage, which has been caused by the Supreme Personality of Godhead's illusory energy. Being a most calm soul, I was victimized by the illusory energy and have become like a dancing dog. Now I shall give up all lusty desires and free myself from this illusion. I shall become a merciful, well-wishing friend to all living entities and always absorb myself in Krishna consciousness. Simply because I have chanted the holy name of the Lord in the association of devotees, my heart is now becoming purified. Therefore, I shall not fall victim again to the false lures of material sense gratification. Now that I have become fixed in the absolute truth, henceforward I shall not identify myself with the body. I shall give up false conceptions of I and mine and fix my mind on the lotus feet of Krishna. And Prabhupada says, this should be the standard of determination for all Krishna conscious persons. This verse. Now, I would really like, because I can see that I'm not the only tired man in this assembly. if you can read this, it's for your own edification. 6-2. Here you find what should be the standard of determination for all devotees in Krishna consciousness. If you meditate, oh Krishna, I am actually in your eternal path who was so long in illusion and maya, please take pity on me. Then you will become free from the false over-endeavor and you will begin to endeavor properly in your spiritual life. So Hare Krishna, I thank you very much for listening. I want to now ask you again the question, two points on prayasha. What was the subject matter? Now we just collect points, no realizations. That we have to, it's good to separate the two. What did you hear? What is prayasha?
Over-endeavoring. Over-endeavoring to collect knowledge.
To collect knowledge.
Karma and Vairagya.
And karma and Vairagya. Pratishtha, yes. Can I just ask, because it was such a point, anything on Pratishtha?
The root cause of all anatta.
Yes, all anatta is perfect. Very important. And you practice a little, anyway, I shouldn't, yeah, is it?
It is also a part of practice that it is manifested through
Pratishtha. Yes, Pratishtha has two forms. It has the subtle form, There's name, fame, and profit. Adoration is sometimes what it says. The gross form of it, that's like the ghost of pratishtha, and the body, or that is like the subtle form is, like the gross is, much only for sex or intercourse. It is related to each other. It's the strongest material desire. In other words, even if you have given up this very strong desire for enjoyment with the opposite sex, then this remains the ghost. It haunts you like a ghost. The very end. It's very heavy. For fame, people climb mountains, risk their lives. You can't avoid it. You have to have your Krishna consciousness, and you understand Krishna is my Lord, doing this for Him, and He is so kindly allowing me, and He's actually the doer. Or if you are not in that consciousness, you have to feel, I'm the doer. Come on, don't you see it? And
when you raise the objection, it also came to my mind that because we try to endeavor for Krishna, that's also different, and make it much more satisfying, because if we endeavor for ourselves, then we know that we don't agree with that, but if we endeavor for Krishna, then we feel more of the satisfaction.
The higher taste comes. It's like pouring water on the roof, on the root of the tree, and all the leaves, that's all the living entities. And ourselves, we become self realizations. I saw you actually first.
We often see the manager say, yeah, I'm working too hard, you know, in devotional service. So is that then because they're not really doing it for Krishna, that they feel they work too hard?
It's a difficult one. It can be due to different things. You could take a harsh stand saying when your service becomes stressed, that's a sign when you don't think any longer of Krishna. But it's not always like this. Sometimes managers are overworked, really. It's just too much which has to be done, otherwise the ship sinks on the in the ocean. We must be careful with our managers. So not differently, but in general I find this in my service, as I can do is practically give up sleeping and eating when I'm in the fire, but I have to be careful. When you are out of your relationship with Krishna, then the small thing becomes a stressful situation.
Sometimes, if you do much service, the desire of being raised is greater and becomes greater. And the only help is then to think that Krishna is the doer.
That's the only thing which has. Thank you. Then we will have to close the round. I'm very sorry, I forgot you. Please.
As you said, the help is Krishna to do, but who is the help? In fact, Krishna, for example, we must be always be prepared to give all honor to others.
Also to realize
that we are nothing with Krishna. We must be grateful to Krishna through the others.
Mm-hmm.
Because without
it helps when one has this desire for pratishtha to understand that we get everything through others really and respect devotees, and then you lose the desire for pratishtha. Thank you. Yes, I think.
Mm-hmm. I didn't catch when you mentioned this verse for standard of determination. Which book it was?
Yes. Oh yeah, I'm sorry. It was the Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam, 6th canto, 2nd chapter, verse 36 to 38. Mm-hmm. Good. There was actually, you had so many. I have to be. This Mataji, I interrupted you earlier. Yes, please.
I realize that actually Krishna Vamsha is very sensitive to begin practice of detachment.
Yeah, thank you. Very simple practice and detachment are there. Can concentrate on them. Good. So I thank all of you very, very much. We have gone a little bit over time. We don't want to do this. May I just, before you leave, give one a bit too practical considerations. First of all, I see some of you are tired. Please rest enough during these seminars, so that the experience of going to the seminar becomes an inspiring and happy occasion for you, and you don't have to fight with an unconcentrated mind which runs wildly because of not enough rest. Please rest enough, and maybe you can't take all of the seminars. That's what the devotees wrote us here. Mm. Obviously, I want all of you to come back. second thing is, that I will tell tomorrow. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Iti Gauri Jai ki jai. Welcome to the second part of our then you can just take it this little thing down, then it can go a little bit more right. And then you move this one more meter. All like this. Very good. Very good. Yesterday we opened our seminar by explaining that Krishna consciousness means almost like a process which can be compared to gardening. We can almost call it transcendental gardening, where we take care of our Bhaktilata Beach, or the Krishna consciousness which we have received, in order to bring it to its full fruition, which means that we can get love of Godhead. Now, in yesterday's and also today's seminar, we will discuss about things which are unfavorable for the growth of our Krishna conscious plant. Who of you remember the first 2 points, please? Yes. Adhyahara, overeating, over collecting, and discovering. Today we will move to talk prajnapa. which means to talk materially or uselessly. Now, you will certainly all agree that it is a need to talk and to communicate. In the Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada speaks about birds who says that even the birds do speak. In the morning they do their chirpings, which is nothing else than communicating, either questioning where is food and where is enjoyment, or answering here in this area there's something to be found. Now the human tongue is actually given to us to talk, but we should you can do a favorable talk, as is explained in the Bhagavatam verse 12:49-50. There it says, verse that do not describe the transcendental personality of Godhead, but instead deal with temporary matters, are simply false and useless. Only those words that manifest the transcendental qualities of the Supreme Lord are actually truthful, auspicious, and pious. Those words describing the glories of the all-famous personality of Godhead are attractive, relishable, and ever fresh. Indeed, such words are a perpetual festival for the mind, and they dry up the ocean of misery. When coming here, I talked to one devotee on the way and said, do you also feel like me, just coming to these seminars, something wonderful happens and one cannot really get enough? I know some of you are going from one seminar to the next, the reason is that they feel a divine inspiration, a festival for the mind, which dries up the ocean of misery. Such words, words describing Krishna have this tremendous potency. Krishna is present in this world at five addresses. One is the holy name, the next is the Bhagavatam, and the verse describing Krishna. Yet another address of the Supreme Lord is his deity form, where we can come and have darshan of him. Another address of the Supreme Lord is the holy dance, where we go and make contact with Krishna. And the fifth address is he is there where sadhus are, where devotees are, and talk about him, and he becomes present. In fact, that reminds us quite well of the Christian maxim that the Lord, the Bible explains, or is it Jesus explains that wherever my disciples come together, pupils, I think he also said disciples, there I will be present in Vani, Pontius Pilatus, do not know how to speak his name in English, really.
Pilate?
When he was giving the judgment about Jesus, he said, tell me, when are you more powerful? When you live and talk, or when you are dead? He knew that Jesus' talk or words would retain their potency even after he had gone. Therefore he said, make it simple for you and for me. Just say, everything you said is nonsense. Revoke what you have said. Then we will not have any problem in no Christianity in the future. He didn't say that. That's my comment. We all know birds have a potency. They do not only carry a meaning. Actually, I will make a little exercise with you. It's not exercise really, but I will explain you. There are two types of sounds in this world. One which comes from objects coming together, like for instance this is a sound, or even water flowing in a river. It means the water molecules are coming together and a pleasant is created. Dead objects colliding together, that's one side. That's one sound. And the other is sounds created by voices, like human and non-human voices. Of these human of these two, obviously the human voices create, are most important for our discussion here, because we are that species. These human voices fall in two categories. One is meaningless, and the other is meaningful, wonderful. You are extremely sensitive, meaningful. For instance, a word like hubbledy-dubble has no meaning. Whereas a word like tree carries with it a certain image which is created in the mind as soon as you hear this vibration. We will look now on the meaningful words. There again, two divisions. One is material, and the other is what a good idea. Spiritual. Now, the spiritual sounds, again, there are different sounds, so they describe spiritual phenomena, but one is just spiritual phenomena, spiritual philosophy, and the most important of all the spiritual sounds is the name of God. It has the most potency because He is present there. Holy name. The other is just philosophy or description of spiritual phenomena. Certainly also very valuable, but that's like the priceless gift which is given to those who have voices to chant the holy names. That's the highest use of the human voice. It can manifest the presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead who comes in sound. Now, amongst the talk, we are now wanting to look a little at Prajapati, useless talk. This, we will get into this now with great reluctancy. I hope, like all of you, that I'm soon through this area of my presentation, get to the very positive thing. We will now talk about meaningless sound. There are certain kinds of meaningless sounds. One is just called Jalpa. I feel many of us have experienced. Jalpa is just more or less not talking about things which have an existential value. For instance, if we were now in the midst of this conversation begin to talk about weather, this would not be so relevant for this discussion because we are not in a meteorological institute and so on. Now, it is just meaningless talk where a person just more or less wants to be heard. He just begins to say something, not really for the sake of saying something useful or helpful, but just in order to also say something. Sometimes in discussions, one has this impression that the other person really doesn't listen to what is said, but just waits until the one person is done with this thing, and then he can just get rid of what he has to say. This is called jalpa. Now, there is another form of discussion. This is very annoying. Do you also have some experience in this? Sometimes you try to preach to someone, and you really... And he just waits until you finish and says something totally unrelated. This would be jalpa, or he might do it himself also. That would not be so. Now comes the second type of talk, which also falls into this category of useless talk. It's called vitendra. Now this is something very disturbing. Vitendra means you just want to be victorious over the other person. Truth is not the concern of this talk. You are not, in such talk, you're not interested to find truth, but you just want to defeat the other person by arguments, by skills, and so on and so forth. It appears a lot that in mundane politics this technique is used. There, someone just, you know, when they talk endlessly, and each member says something which he hopes to be, is useful to make his viewpoint strong and to defeat the other guy so that he is elected. Now, there is another talk which is favorable. This is called Vada. Vada means, Paramahansa translates it as the conclusive truth. For instance, let us say two devotees come together and talk in order to find out what is the best to do for Krishna. So that conclusion which they arrive by respecting each other's viewpoint, but just trying to find out truth. That's the matter. You look for truth. That conclusion, that is Krishna. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, I am the conclusive truth amongst the tradition. This is Vada. So Jalpa, Vitendra, this is just argumentative talk in order to show one's own superiority and put down the other's viewpoint, and then Vada. These are three categories which we find indicated in the Bhagavad Gita. Now, I want to just go with you through a list of useless talk as it is described by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. I can imagine that when we hear this list, we will find that some of these points are also on our talk agenda. So let us just smile in a humble way when we hear it, but not become overly disturbed. Useless talk is explained in the newspaper, in TV, in radio, in novels. After eating, the human being has a tendency to engage in useless talk. I think because the blood seems to be in the stomach more, talk along. Another useless talk is arguments, where you just, you know, argue on and on and on. The spiritual intelligence cannot be reached by argument terms. Another useless talk, now this gets very fine and subtle, is to talk about the dualities of this world. This is good and this is bad. Chaitanya Charitamrita says, E bala e manda sarva manudam. To say this is good and this is bad is an invention of the mind. Let me tell you a story to make this point a little bit clearer. A story which I like to tell these days. It is about a wise old man. He has a beautiful horse in his stall, in his barn. So beautiful is the horse that the king himself comes and wants to buy the horse. But he says, no. How can I sell a friend? Next morning, the horse is no longer in the barn. It has fled. The people of the village come together and say, this is very bad. Now you don't have the horse and you don't have the money. No, no, said the old man, this is not good and this is not bad. It just is. After 1 week, they hear the joyful before the village, and they see the white horse together with 20 other wild horses. the white horse leads all the horses into the barn, and the the village people say, this is very good. Now you have 20 horses, 21 horses. This is very good. No, says the old man, this is not good, this is not bad. Simply is. We don't know the context. We don't know Krishna's plan. Next morning, the only son of the old man goes onto the horse, on one of the wild horses, in order to zuweiden, to bridle it, I think it's called, to make it useful for riding, to tame it, sorry. And the wild horse is cooperative, but at one moment he just goes like and throws the only son of the old man on the ground, and the son breaks both of his legs. In Vedic society, this is a tragedy, because when you become old, your son is supposed to look after you. The poor village said, "My home. It was very bad that all these horses came, and now you lost your son. He will be schwerbehindert, he will be incapacitated for a long time." I think you know by now the answer of the old man. It's not good, it is not bad. It simply is. We don't know the whole. After half a year, war is declared on the country. All the young men from all the villages and towns have to go to the army. They all go to the front, and it is a loser's fight. They all are slaughtered mercilessly, except for one. That is the son of the old man. "Oh," said the old man, "Peter, this is very good. What happened to you? Now we may not have our sons. Sorry, you may not have a son with such nice photogenic legs, but at least you have a son. We lost our sons." The old man said, "This is not good, this is not bad. We don't know the whole. We don't know Krishna's arrangement." By the way, this story is an endless story. I could tell it at the end of my seminar. The answer is always the same, which is in correspondence to this A Bala A Mandan Daiva Manodam. To say this is good and this is bad is a question of the mind. It is a question of perspective. Dear Prabhus, dear Madhujis, dear skeptics, if we can learn this one point, that what happens to us in a wider context and understanding is good, is not good and is not bad, then we will stop to lament and to hanker. I have a personal realization on this. I became very, very sick and thought I would never be able to do the service which I so much like to do. But at one time I became convinced that it is good that you have become so sick now. You can learn from this and use it for your spiritual advancement. And when I was rooted in this understanding, when I accepted, when I stopped to lament about why me, and I'm not so old, and trying to give my best, and when I stopped lamenting and just accepted that it was going according to past karma, I became joyful, and I feel I was cured by this internal joy, which was the opposite of lamentation or hankering. I just thought, whatever happens is coming like waves in the ocean. Let us tolerate the coming and going of good and bad, just like we tolerate the coming and going of summer and winter season. So to say this is good and this is bad, it is something which is considered to be prajalpa. This is a very high standard, but it's interesting. Now, especially this talking about good and bad becomes dangerous. We speak now of the danger. When you engage it in talking about others, when you begin talking about others' bad qualities, what happens is one soon can come to the most dangerous form of prajalpa, and that is offending Vaishnavas. This is how Bhaktivinoda Thakur analyzes it. If our tongue is used in talking about the so-called bad qualities of anyone, and if our tongue is especially used in talking about the so-called bad qualities of Vaishnavas, becomes very dangerous. It says, "My dear king, when a man persecutes great souls, all his benedictions of longevity, beauty, fame, religion, blessings, and promotion to higher planets will be destroyed. Whoever indulges in statements which are even more succinct.